Hi, and welcome back to another episode of FYI with Daniel and Glenda. I am your host, Daniel Scott.
And I am his co-host, Glenda Walker.
Alrighty then, and we're going to get right down to it. I am excited about today's episode because we're going to be talking about something that everybody can relate to.
Wait, but before we get to today's episode, Daniel, we need to thank our listeners for listening to all the previous episodes. That's right. Really appreciate you listening, taking time out. We appreciate your feedback, and we appreciate your questions.
And we love, love, love you.
Yes, we do, 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 do. And so there was a question, Daniel.
Yes, yeah, so that came up. There was a question on our Facebook page. Someone messaged me about investing with celebrities like Daymond John.
Yeah, so celebrity endorsed products.
Yes, and you all know who Daymond John is. He's the investor of the inventor of FUBU, mm-hmm. Right?
Yeah, For Us By Us.
And he does a clothing line. But my answer off the rip is no. I wouldn't, just because I am very skeptical of celebrity endorsed products, only because our investments or ideas, because I always look at it like this. Someone with his network, if it was something that was really a money maker, he would have the resources to pull together to make that happen. If he was seeking investments from the public, it would make me question, why would you go to the public? Because we know that your network, it has the net worth. So Matt's would be my answer. I would be skeptical just because, you know, it's celebrity endorsed and you're reaching out to the public for support. And if it all, of course, depends on the idea and stuff, but my immediate answer is no.
Yeah, I kind of agree. I'm always somewhere in the middle. I can never give y'all a straight answer, right? But it is what it is. But yeah, I'm kind of leery of celebrity endorsed products and services as well, because some of them just put their name to it just to get a check. Right. So they don't care about, you know, what's going on. They don't care how that product works, what the side effects are, what the effects of the community or the environment are. They just don't care. They just put their name on things to get a check. But then you do have some that do the research, that have good teams that support them. So my high-level answer is no.
Right. I think that's consensus.
But it all depends, of course.
And look, you know, we protect our money like we protect everything else. And you should always be skeptical and wary of things that you're going into business with people you really don't know, because they're a celebrity or they're a face that you recognize from the TV or from ads or whatever, you don't know. So always do your research.
Ask questions. How much did you invest?
Right.
Because if you didn't invest nothing and you just getting a check, I'm not investing nothing.
And, you know, that would all be disclosed in their what?
In their
business plan.
Business plan. Correct.
That's right. And we always tell you business plan, business plan, business plan. Everything should have a business plan. But okay, so we want to answer that because we always promise you that we're going to answer your questions and always get back to you when we get those questions from you. Today's episode is something that's near and dear
to both of our hearts and probably all of you as well.
Yes, customer service, customer retention.
Yes, customer service, customer retention in the small business space. So, you know, really, you know what? Let's get into it and let's talk about it.
Let's talk about it, yeah.
So, okay, so providing great customer service. You know, I see a lot of times online where people are commenting, and I'm just going to put it out there, especially with Black-owned businesses, that they don't give great customer service, you know? So what does that look like? What does customer service mean to you with you giving it to your clients? What does that look like?
Well, you know, I'm glad you mentioned that, the Black-owned businesses part. Let's put a pin right there on that. Do you feel like the bar is raised higher for Black-owned businesses only because they're already fighting against other, you know, things that are pushed against them? Do you think that the expectations are that it has to be higher than, say, white-owned business?
Yes, I agree. I do. I believe that. And the bar has to be set higher with anything that Black people do. So in the business world, you know, a Caucasian-owned business, an Asian-owned business, a Middle Eastern owned business, they can make a mistake, Okay. So the shopper will still go back to them without a problem. Okay.
Right.
And sometimes they don't even try to make the mistake right. They just make a mistake and don't care and just, you know, and just give the bad service and somebody's coming back. Well, with a black-owned business, when a black-owned business makes a mistake or doesn't quite meet the customer's expectations, they get blasted online. They say, we're never going to come back. It's no air of forgiveness with black-owned businesses, products and services. I've seen it from both sides. I've seen it on a product scale and on a services scale, and it's so unfortunate. So even on a services scale, you know, I provide a service through my company, Relationship Management Solutions, RMSI. So I provide a service where I provide business coaching and or loan consulting for small business owners. Well, you know, prior to me getting into my business, when I was in the banking world, I would talk to people about what they needed to do to become loanable or to get this line of credit or equipment loan or commercial loan. I would tell them, they would go to one of my counterparts that is clearly the opposite color of me and tell them the same thing. Right. It's like, you know, I can give the information out, but I'm not credible because I'm a black woman.
Right, right. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so that's why I say, I mean, it's not really a fair, comparison when you talk about that whole customer service level. It's like when someone goes in with preconceived notions and already expecting something not to be great, and then just the slightest thing that is off, then makes it a bad experience.
Makes it a horrible experience, and don't even give the business owner the opportunity to fix it.
Right.
Some things are fixable.
So let me ask you, with that, do you feel like the customer is always right?
So yeah, so we had this discussion during lunch today. So we all know the statement, and it's a very old statement, that the customer is always right. So I used to say yes to that. And that's probably because of my corporate banking training of always, you know, being in banking for over 27 years. And yes, the customer's always right. Do what the customer says, but you still have to follow the rules of the bank. You know, you still have to follow the company's policies and procedures. So at one point I did feel that way, but no, I don't feel that the customer is always right. Customers sometimes have unrealistic expectations. Okay, and with their unrealistic expectations, they allude that to customer service, which is not always the key. Me being kind, courteous, responsive, empathetic to you, providing good service is different from you having such a high level of expectations because I couldn't get the job done. Let me give an example. So, again, I work with small businesses to help them find financing, okay? So when I'm having a consultation with a client, I'm asking them all these things, you know, tell me about your revenues. Did you have a loss? Tell me about your personal credit, because personal credit is key when borrowing money for your business. Oh, my personal credit is great. Okay, well, when we get into the loan process and underwriting, their personal credit is not so great. So they'll come back and say, well, What credit report did you pull? And that ain't supposed to be on there. What do you mean? And then want to get upset with me and the banker because we could not get them approved because they have these issues. But why are you getting upset with me? You are the problem. So in that particular situation, they said I gave them bad service because I wasn't able to get them their loan or line of credit. But in actuality, they lied. And they had unrealistic expectations, knowing that their credit sucked.
So there was no accountability.
Customers do not want to be accountable for anything. And that's so unfortunate. Usually when you give great service, you never get feedback. Or you rarely get feedback. You know, now we talked about a lot of surveys, and you can do Google reviews. And some customers do that. So thank you all that do that when you get good service. But most people don't. The only time they communicate with the company or post a Google review is when they're getting bad service.
Right. You know, I also don't believe the customer is always right. I never did. And I always thought that the idea of the customer is always right came from somebody who never owned a business. And, you know, when you're always the shopper and never the shop owner, it's easy to criticize and blame when you've never been in the shoes of someone who owns their own business. I get that all the time in the businesses I've been involved in. And there are people who, well, and hey, you know, I'm the technology guy. So with the way technology is now, I think that the exposure of these people that are quick to say the customer is always right, like these Karens who are going into the stores, and this stuff is being recorded. Everybody's pulling out their phones. So we're actually—
Big brothers everywhere.
Yeah, we're bearing witness to customers aren't always right. We're bearing witness to the abuse that cashiers or the abuse that service-oriented people are experiencing now from customers because they go into these stores expecting this high level of service. And let me tell you, if you're going, I mean, you're going into somewhere like McDonald's and you're expecting to be treated like you're at Chops, the steakhouse.
Well, let's just say McDonald's and let's say Chick-fil-A.
Yeah, well, that's a perfect example.
Let's keep it apples to apples.
No, I'm saying though, but you know, people do feel like, yes, let's compare apples to apples. Chick-fil-A and McDonald's. We can do that, but what I'm saying is people are walking into these places expecting—
I got you, like five star.
Yeah. Let's look at what you're paying.
Right.
But I
still think you should still be giving good service. I don't care if I'm paying 99 cents. And good service doesn't always mean going over and beyond. It's just being courteous.
Good service comes from good pay. So as a shop owner, you got
to— we can equate that too. But, you know, and this is where I said that sometimes I do believe the customer is right and sometimes I don't. But I don't care if I'm giving you 10 cents of my money for now later. I want good service. So I just a courteous. Good morning. Good afternoon. Hello. Thank you.
If you pay me $6 an hour, you're going to hear, and I'm having a bad day, you're going to feel it. Now, if you're paying me $25 an hour, I'd be happy and smiley all day long.
Now, I do get it. Pay does equate with the happiness of your employees and staff, but not always. It's not always pay. And we talked about this from the top up. If the top is miserable, I don't care what you pay everybody underneath the top. They're going to be miserable because the top sets the tone of the company.
Right. I get it. Yeah, I agree. I just feel like I feel like there's too much right now. There's too much expectations on everything being great.
Yes, I agree. And some things are okay with being mediocre.
Right.
You know, and there's some things you expect, you know, a certain level of service. But I do think that customers are people are distressed.
Right. And you know,
I always say I don't take things personal in the service-based industry because people have so many pressures and they're stressed, and that's fine. They lash out at you, you know, and it's usually not about you. It's about something else going on in their life. Some people are just miserable.
I'm always going to side on the side of the person working behind the counter.
Oh, yes, because I don't think they deserve, you know, to be treated, you know, the way they are treated. But again, you give what you get.
Yeah.
You know, I don't care if you're making $5 or $6 an hour. I didn't tell you to take the job. You know, I hate to sound harsh like that. But if you are showing up for work, show up.
Right.
You know, show up. It takes nothing to say good morning or hello when you're processing a client or do you need help? You know, and you know, I get it. They're overworking, underpaid. But in my opinion, you know, don't show up because it's a reflection of my business.
Well, I'm just defiant, Daniel, and I just...
defiant, Daniel.
and you know, I'm glad you brought up Chick-fil-A and McDonald's, because let's talk about that for a minute. You know, the differences are tremendous. And I'm not saying
but
anything...
But it's culture. I just mentioned that it's from the top down.
Right.
It's probably culture.
But I'm saying I don't want to take anything away from McDonald's because I know that McDonald's has an outstanding management trainee program. And I've seen some McDonald's employees go on to be great leaders and do wonderful
things. Right.
Yeah, they've actually gone on to own McDonald's and so forth. So I don't want to discredit McDonald's there, but I do want to say that – overall your experiences. And I think that has a lot to do with McDonald's is franchise owned and Chick-fil-A is corporate owned. So Chick-fil-A has their hand in the whole process.
They have the say-so in everything.
Absolutely. And McDonald's, you know, you rely on the owners to represent your company, but that doesn't always happen and is not always the case. So
it's not always a good true representation of your brand.
Yeah, let's put that asterisk in there for them. But to say the least, when you go to Chick-fil-A, you really do get that. I mean, if you've spoken with me via email or on a phone call, I always use my pleasure. And I got that from Chick-fil-A. I love it.
It's just habit.
Yeah, I love it.
And you know, when any time a client says, Glenda, thank you so much, I'll be like, my pleasure. You know, it's just, I don't know. It's just a good tagline.
It's so nice.
It just makes everybody feel warm and fuzzy.
And I've never worked for Chick-fil-A, but I still do the my pleasure. I mean, I probably would make a good drive-thru person.
Okay, so when we're talking about service and service level, there, one of my friends on her Facebook page posed a question. She texts a lot in her industry. And so she said that, you know, somebody replied to her, texting is not professional. And so is that a form of service? And is that the case? You know, because you responding, she's in a business owner, small business owner. She texts, you know. Now, I don't know the depth of the text, but that is a level of service.
Okay, so I think you're showing age at that point, because I'm a texter, and I always text my clients. Texts are a version of email now, because people don't really check email.
Well, they said, no. So they said texting is not professional, or they don't discuss their financial matters or their matters via text. So when you're servicing a client, is that bad service not to... or to continue to text them, and that's not their preferred method of contact?
Oh yeah, absolutely. I mean, if they've told you, I mean, honestly, email is not a good way to disclose financial information. I mean, it's less secure than texting, but that's on another subject.
But let's just say any information.
Yeah, no, you definitely want to go the preference of the customer. I mean, I have customers who only want to speak via email. And I am the same way, but I have some that like to talk on the phone, and I hate talking on the phone. I hate it. I loathe when I know that the conversation is going to be over 10 minutes on a phone call.
And you know what was funny? I was reading the comments. I commented on a post and said, you know, I engage with the client their preferred way. Now, so I prefer other ways than the client may. That is still a level of service. You know, the client could say you're giving them bad service if you don't do that. But I read all the comments, and the consensus was like, people's like, I just don't want to talk to people. Like, I love talking to people.
No, I love talking to people face to face. I'm a people person. You know this. But on the phone, man, look, there are sometimes I see that a name come up on a caller ID, and I'm like, ugh. Because I know it's going to be like an hour-long conversation. Yeah, and that, you know, your ear gets all hot from the phone. And if you're on your cell phone, the screen burns up your cheek. To me, it's text me, email me.
Yeah, for something really quick, I'll text, you know, or like a one-word answer to a question or, you know, updating them on something. But I love to speak to my clients. Now, some are more long-winded than others. So I have some tools that I use to get off the phone.
Well, don't share them here because...
I try to wrap up the discussions, you know, after a while.
I usually find a spot on the wall and I stare at it until the conversation is over because it's hard. I mean, and listen, that's a fault of my own. I mean, if you're a customer that calls me on my phone, I love you and you're not, it's not you, it's me.
Okay, so we talked about the client. Yeah. So from the client side of them having sometimes high and unrealistic expectations based on the service of the product.
Yes.
But what if the business owner really screwed up? What is the remedy? Like, how far do you go to turn that bad customer service situation to a good or at least a level playing field where they may come back and not bash you?
Well, I'll tell you, having owned, you know, several service-driven businesses, I evaluate the the situation on a customer by customer basis. I mean, and I haven't had a lot of them because my customer service is great. But
sure it is, Daniel.
No, but seriously, I look at it as, like, through the big picture. And like I've said on several podcasts, I always look at every situation like I'm driving on a highway. And I think of all the exits as possibilities or outcomes. And, you know, if this is a customer that is going to be a long-term customer where I can generate revenue for many years to come, I'm willing to take some money, a loss off that situation and to appease the customer. So,
but what if it's just that one, you know, one hit wonder customer? Like, do you not try to fix that as well? Because they can be the cancer to your business.
You know, I'll always try. I will always try. I mean, that certainly is important. But, you know, again, we'll go back to those expectations of somebody. Sometimes you have to, in that situation, especially if there's anger involved, there just has to be time to melt the ice that they have just frozen around their heart. Because, you know, I'm a person who doesn't, you know, I don't wear my feeling anger on under, my sleeves. Yeah. I'm able to really look at every situation and think, you know, especially after turning 45 years ago, I just decided nothing is going to bother me and I'm not going to let things disrupt my spirit. So, you know, I will do my best. And they will feel that it's my best. I will let them know. And, you know, you can tell when someone's really trying. But sometimes people put up barriers when they're angry or they feel like they've been wronged. And there is no chipping away at those barriers. It's like changing someone's mind. That's a really hard thing to do. I always equate it to religion. Like, you know, you cannot convince somebody who believes in God that there is no God because they are steadfast in their belief that it is what it is, and there is no change in their mind. And some people get like that with situations, and you have to realize, listen, I've done everything I can do. There's nothing I can do here to chip away. So you just have to let time heal.
Yes.
And eventually it'll go away. We live in such a short news cycle that, you know, everything that's happening today will be forgotten tomorrow. So unless it gets dragged on. And then at some point, people are just like, okay, enough is enough.
Right, right. Like the Will Smith smack, right?
Yeah, exactly.
but that's all fine and dandy. But like you said, when we first started talking about this, Black businesses don't get that pass, you know? And I do believe Black business owners do try to remedy situations when they happen, as any other business as well. So I think Black businesses try harder to provide customer service. Do we drop the ball sometimes? Yes, but that's all businesses drop the ball sometimes. But we don't get the grace and the gratitude for dropping a ball. If we drop the ball one time, it's, oh, that's why I don't want to do business with Black businesses. Oh, that's why this, that's why that. And I hate to see that. When I see that on my Facebook news feed, it upsets me. Not that I know the whole situation, but it upsets me because I know that they didn't give that business owner the opportunity to fix it, mm-hmm. you know, or their expectations are super higher because it's a minority owned business. And it's even worse with women owned businesses.
Right.
It's even worse.
Yeah, I hear that. And, you know, all that I can say is in that situation is I can empathize because I can see the struggle and do my part to help alleviate the struggle, but by educating people within my own community. But, you know, when people already have, again, this falls back on the preconceived notions,
yeah.
You know, people are steadfast in their belief about something. There is no change in their mind. I mean, people who feel that way, I often wonder to myself, well, why are you even shopping there in the first place?
Right.
You know, just
right.
don't go. I mean, even though your money's good, it's more of an irritating headache because it's ultimately not going to be good because you're always going to go in with something. Do you feel like even within the community that it's harder? Like, do you feel like, you know, that Black-owned businesses face the same criticism within the community?
Oh, absolutely. We are our worst critics, I tell you. So Black people are super hard. That's where I see it from. From Black patrons and Black people are super harder on Black-owned businesses. It's the worst. I have yet to see that with other races and nationalities where they're harder on black businesses. So it is in our own community. So, which is so unfortunate, but people always use the nail salon as a situation. You can go into the nail salon, you come in there, the Asian lady starts talking. They both looking at you. You don't speak any Asian language or dialect, but you know they talking about you. You know they talking about them toes, them fingers or whatever. And then they will dig into your toe and have you bleeding. And you will be like, oh, it's okay, no problem. And come back there the next week. Let that be a black nail salon where they did that. Where they digged into your toe, because they do that all the time in the Asian salons, and had you bleeding, you will be all online. Oh, I went to XYZ salon. It's a black one, and their service is horrible, and they made me bleed, and this and the third. It's horrible that black people do that to black people. And let's just treat it as businesses. If you going to drag a black-owned business, drag the Asian business. Drag the other business. Drag those businesses, too. Let's keep it on an even playing field.
Do you ever do you think that we could ever get there?
Hope so, because I'm just a hopeless romantic. I would hope so, but it's gonna take a while. It's mindset, you know. It's beyond us. This talks to hundreds and hundreds of years back on how we were, you know, how we were. Things were ingrained in our mind, you know, from our ancestors in slavery time. So it's generations of things that's going on. So it's not that anybody started this today. It's just a long history of our mentality that we have not gotten out of yet.
Okay. Yeah, because I mean, it's good that we get that perspective from you on that, because like I said, I can speak on it, but, you know, I don't live it.
Okay, so let me ask you a question.
Yeah.
You patronize black businesses.
I do.
How is the service overall?
Overall, I've had great experiences.
Okay.
I've had great experiences. And I haven't had any situation to where, I mean, and look, you know, I've often reached out to you for referrals, and those were black-owned businesses.
Nope, not all of them.
Not all of them, because the ones that weren't are the ones that failed.
Oh, well, good point.
So,
And actually, the one that I'm thinking of was horrible, and they horribly failed.
Yes, so... You know, I mean, I grew up very diverse cultures, and so I really, you know, like I said, I can empathize, but I can never say that I understand
y'all
completely, because
if y'all don't know yet, Daniel is a white gray-eyed male. So if you didn't get it yet, I'm just gonna spell it out there for you. He's a white gray-eyed male.
But I understand, and I do. Like I said, I always tell people I can empathize, but I have not walked in the shoes. And no person, unless they've walked in their shoes, truly knows the experiences. You can say you've heard things and you've lived with somebody, or your best friend is this or whatever, until you're actually within that skin, you can't truly understand what it's like.
That's true. And so another example I want to use is there was an accident in my home a couple of years ago where I had to move out for like 3 or 4 months. And so we had to hire a bunch of contractors to do work. And I hear this a lot, black contractors. Contractors as a whole are issues. I end up using all black contractors to fix my home, but I had white contractors that didn't show up that would schedule an appointment to give me a quote. They didn't show up. I had Mexican contractors that didn't show up. And I had some black contractors that didn't show up. But I end up using, I think, 6 services. And I had 6 black contractors fix my house. But I hear, oh, black contractors don't show up. And black contractors this. It's contractors, period. So we need to stop with that black this and black that. And just talk about the flaws in the industry.
Right. That's kind of what I was getting at, too, is look at, take race out for a second when you're shopping for something. I mean, unless you're supporting an industry that has, you know, it's what am I looking for here? There's a disparaging.
oh, just maybe like non-representation of
right.
a certain
or there's a disadvantage because, mm-hmm. you know, that you do have that where they, oh, I don't want that in my house or I don't want him in my house or so forth. But again, you know, I don't understand why those people would be shopping with a business or something that people don't.
So let me just ask this basic question, Daniel. When you are, you know, doing business or let's just say this, you are a small business owner. What are the perfect or what are the good customer service attributes that you give to your clients?
Look, for me, it's response. When my customers email me, my clients email me and ask me something, I get back to them right away. I mean, it's immediate. I am immediate on the emails. I'm immediate on the responses. I appreciate that when people are with me. Like when I'm trying to get something done, there is nothing more aggravating than the feeling of the person on the other side is not taking it as seriously. And I understand that there are other things going on and yes, this and yes, that. But when you've got a crucial thing that needs to be taken care of, and that other person, it's just like when we call the bank to address some fees that are on our account that we don't recognize, and you get that person on the line that says, I see it there, but I just don't know, you know, all I can tell you is you just need to hold on. And they put you on hold for 35 minutes to come back and say, yeah, there's nothing we can do. You're responsible. You know, it's things like that. You know, it's kind of that you're, you know, I understand you're anxious to get something resolved, but I'm not going to really put much effort into resolving it.
Okay, so a big thing for you with providing great customer service is being responsive.
Yeah, and being attentive.
Okay.
Yeah, and you can make anybody feel important. Look, you can make everybody feel important.
So I want to touch on that responsiveness because is there an unrealistic expectation to have an email or a phone call back when someone calls you.
So
the expectation is, okay, you call me now. I'm sitting here doing this podcast, right? Mm-hmm. So if I have a client call me now, we're probably not going to finish till about, you know, 4:30. Is it bad service that I didn't call them back in 5 or 10 minutes?
If I was the person trying to call you, I'd say, she shouldn't be on that podcast. She should be answering my call. What's she doing on that podcast? She need to be answering my call.
They don't know I'm on a podcast.
No, they don't.
I could be with another client.
I'm realistic. I'm saying, though, like, it shouldn't be days.
Okay, I agree. So on my voicemail, I believe on my voicemail, I leave... You can text me for a quicker response, or I will return your call within 24 hours. Because I think one business day is good.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely.
Okay, but certain customers have the expectation, I call you, they leave you a message, they hang up, and literally like 15 minutes later, I will get another call from that customer. And I'm like, dude, really?
Oh. Let me tell you.
That pisses me off.
Oh, let me tell you.
You left me a message. Give me the opportunity. And that's when I'm talking about the unrealistic expectations. I do my best to try to return calls in the same business day. I really do my best. But I think the expectation with returning a call or communication should be 24 hours or the next business day. If you call me at Friday at 4 o'clock, I ain't answering.
Let me tell you.
I'll call you Monday.
I got to say this for all the listeners, because I know that there's somebody out there is guilty of this. When you call somebody's phone and they don't pick up, you get the voicemail, don't call the number back again and again and again and again. It's called a voicemail. And I understand even if that voicemail says the voicemail box is full or the user has not set up this mailbox.
Which is bad service, y'all.
That is, but don't keep calling the number. I mean,
that is so annoying. That makes you not want to answer the call even more. And if it's that urgent, you know, shoot them a text. Again, that's when we talk about the preferred way of contact. But sometimes a text saying it's an emergency, please call me, is warranted. You know what I mean? And then you may step away from doing what you're doing and call. But then when that person is just constantly hang up, call back 5 minutes, hang up, call back 5 minutes, hang up, call back 5 minutes. Why?
Right. That is one thing I'm never getting on my Christmas card list.
You still send Christmas cards?
I do.
But yeah, so I think some sometimes customers have high unrealistic expectations. Oh, I called you at 2 o'clock on a Thursday, and you didn't call me back till Friday morning at 9 o'clock. Really, dude?
Yeah.
I think that's good.
I get voicemails that say, hey, this is me. Call me back. Well, who's me? I don't know who me is, and I've had 4 missed calls, so I'm looking at all 4 of those, and it's almost like being in Vegas, and I'm at a slot machine, and I'm just going to pick one random number and go, hey, is this me? Why? Why
but
do you do that?
I think they're saying they see, you know, you see the number come up, and caller ID has gotten better over the years where you see the name, but yeah, that cracks me up too. I'm like, okay, now I got to try to remember this voice. I'm listening to the message like 4, 5, 6 times. Who is this?
I mean, the only thing that you can do is when it's a female voice, and it's, you. Well, there eliminates Carl. Let's see. I just don't know why people do that. That's really aggravating.
Okay, so responsiveness.
Yes.
Is a big one for you. Being attentive. Anything else that you would add that makes you kind of stand out with your customer service?
No, you know, I'm really down to the nuts and bolts about things. I don't put a lot of fluff in things. Just like if you hire
Daniel's pretty straight to the point.
If you hire me to do something, that's what I'm doing. I'm not trying to be mean or anything. I don't need to hear about vacations or anything like that in an email. Just, you know, you hire me to do something, that's what I'm doing. Let's get cut to the chase. You're trying to make money, I'm trying to make you money. Let's do it.
Okay, so for me, I'm a little bit opposite. I want to hear about your vacations, and I want to hear about, you know, your family, and, you know, I want to hear about that stuff because it connects me more to the client. And when I have a tough deal, and that might be a good and bad thing because I get so connected and wrapped up in my clients. When I can't do the loan or the request for them, I take it personal, you know, because I really want to help them. So maybe I need to rethink that, but that's just me, you know.
That's exactly why I don't do it.
Because I lose sleep, y'all. I'm working on a big deal, and I had a bank go, you know, really far into it and turn around and say no. We were banking on that bank, you know, we were counting on that bank. And I lost sleep, and I just stressed out, you know, about, what am I going to do for this client? You know, her building is under contract. She has this great business and this great plan. What am I going to do? So maybe, you know, me not getting so, and I won't say I'm personal with them. You know, they're not coming to my house, you know, and things like that.
Right.
But I am learning personal things about them, you know. So in my business is a, you know, a relationship business. So my ideas of good service is, you know, of course, to be responsive, you know, to be knowledgeable, to be resourceful, and to be empathetic. You know, I think empathy is a big thing. I think a lot of people lack empathy, and a lot of people in the business world lack empathy. I'm dealing with people's credit, their financial status, which could be very humbling. And I'm always really empathetic, and I think that's why I connect with a lot of business owners, because I'm empathetic with their particular situation because everybody got something going on.
Yeah, it's the same with me, but I think that's why I don't do it, just because, you know, with as being a consultant and you're helping somebody create their dream of business ownership, as a lot of involvement, you're going to be spending a lot of time. And I said this on podcasts before, almost all my clients have become my friends.
Yes,
after
the transaction.
Yes.
After you're done with it.
Because and Glenda can attest to this, I internalize a lot.
Yes.
So that's why I try to build that wall in the beginning, just so that I can get through the hard part. And then once we're driving down Easy Street, we can go to Vegas and celebrate or whatever together. But until we get to that point, you know, it's a lot mentally and emotionally, especially, you know, I have a lot of clients that want to start nonprofits, and it's an emotional attachment involved.
That's a whole nother ball game with a nonprofit.
Yeah, someone relates. It's usually related to a death of a family member, and they decide they want to, you know, start this nonprofit in their name. And so there becomes a lot of emotional stuff involved. So that's why you have to kind of separate yourself, or you get too involved too deep. And your subconscious is an amazing thing.
Yeah.
It can work on your system even when you don't know that it's working on your system, and it can take you down bad paths. So that's why I say I learned many years ago, not to internalize, not to get too close. Let me do the job, and then we.
I just have this passion to help small businesses. I really want to see people win. Whether it's small businesses, my friends, friends of friends, I want to see people win. And if a business owner has taken that leap to start their own business, I feel I want to give them every chance and opportunity to be successful. So when those transactions don't go through like I would hope they go through, whether it's something I could have prevented or not, I still take it personal. But so, you know, and
I would say, you know, and that's one thing you're very good at, because, you know, like I said, again, on past podcasts, if you've been listening, you know, 20 years ago when I was just starting out business ownership, I didn't know a lot about it. You know, that's what my degree was in. I was just getting my feet wet with it. And because Glenda was in the banking industry at that time, and she really helped me through some bad situations. I mean, you know, I relied heavily on her when I got into a situation like, I don't know how to get out. Like, this, we're sinking here. And, you know, and I would go to her for that financial advice, and it proved to be well worth it. And
then I didn't make him feel bad for the situation.
Absolutely. Not at all. And that's why, it always amazes me when we just were saying this at lunch, I refer people to her and I share my story with them. And I say, hey, you're kind of in the situation I was in. You need to contact her. Let her guide you, get these lines of credit for your business and this and that. And, you know, if that were me sitting on the other side of the desk, the minute I walked out that door, I'd been on my cell phone. Hello, Mrs. Walker, I need to talk to you and schedule an appointment. I do a consultation. What is it going to take?
Right.
And it's always amazing to me when people in time of need allow their pride to get in the way of their business, and then their business ends up failing.
And then they're also providing bad service during that time because they're stressed out. And so if you're stressed out in your business, that exudes onto the client.
Yeah, absolutely.
So just think about it, you know? So the more you're at ease and the more your business is doing well, you're probably going to give off great service and better service, you know, than you have when you're stressed out. That's with anything. When you're personally stressed, you lash out. Business owners lash out when they're going through those bad financial times. So they give that bad service. Doesn't make it right? No, but that's what happens. But in a nutshell, while we're coming to a close, you know, everyone, let's think about, you know, keep that same energy with every business.
Yeah.
You know, keep that same energy. So if you're going to hold Black businesses to a higher standard, hold Asians, Caucasians, you know, any other business to that same standard. Don't level the playing field. Not don't, but level the playing field is what I'm saying.
Right.
So keep that same energy. Keep that same level of expectation with any business you do. And give the business owner, regardless of what color the business is, give them the opportunity to fix it.
Yeah,
you know, if it's a way that you can call that business, especially with smaller businesses, you can usually get to the owner pretty easy, you know.
Right.
Ask to speak to the owner and let them know. 'Cause sometimes
90% of the time you're dealing with the owner.
Yes, 90% of the time you're dealing with the owner. But in a situation that you are or you aren't, call them up. You know, just like you booked them, call them back and let them know what your concerns were and what you appreciated about that they did well and what they didn't do well and what they could do differently. Most business owners will accept that criticism because they want to do better. People are going into business to make money. But yes, people are going to business to provide great services, products that help solve things, and they want to do well. But feedback from a customer is so important in doing that. I get the Google reviews and all that, but pick up the phone. Just like you pick up the phone and book that appointment, pick up the phone and talk to that business owner about their service or their employee, because sometimes they don't know.
Yeah, don't be a keyboard warrior.
A keyboard warrior.
Yeah, you know, call the business. I mean, if you're brave enough to write a review and just go ham on them, you at least should be brave enough to call the business itself and allow them to resolve it. Now, if they don't resolve it, you go right ahead. I mean, because right. I love reading them bad reviews. I'm not going to lie. They crack me up.
Yes.
I go on Google sometimes just to read reviews because you guys are some funny people.
You got a lot of time on his hands, y'all.
I do have a lot of time on my
hands. No, for real. And a lot, and I mentioned, you know, letting them know about the experience with the employees, because a lot of business owners don't know.
Yes, that's true.
And people never share. If I don't know that my employee is doing something wrong, I don't know how to fix it. So definitely let them know when it's one of their employees that's providing that bad service, because I'm sure they will fix it.
Yeah, because we all know Tammy's two-faced Tammy may be smiling at her manager and then snarling at you. So be wary of two-faced Tammy. Sorry if there's a Tammy out there, and just like the Karens, if your name is Karen, I'm sorry.
Yeah, so I would say that. You want to add anything?
I was going to say that's going to be our question on Facebook and Twitter is, do you think the customer is always right? I'd love to hear your feedback and what you think.
We would love your feedback on that. And we would love small business owners to chime in on that.
Absolutely.
You know, do you think the customer's always right? We know from a consumer side, most people are going to say yes. I'm just curious to see. Maybe we should put that poll up. On our Facebook page or Instagram page. So we'll put a poll up because we're just curious and want to know what people's thoughts are. But Daniel, responsiveness.
Yeah, responsiveness.
Being attentive. Getting the job done right.
Yeah, absolutely.
Our key customer service attributes for him and his businesses. Me, of course, is responsiveness. Again, being attentive. Listening and providing empathy are some things that I feel that are valuable when I'm providing good service.
Yeah, absolutely. I think those are easy to do.
Easy to do.
They don't cost anything.
They don't cost nothing. Like sharing this podcast when you see it online costs you nothing.
Telling your friends.
But as we're ending now, guys, and in a second, Daniel's going to tell you about how everywhere you can listen to us and follow us and such. But I mentioned a lot during this podcast that I help small businesses with financial and provide business coaching. My business is Relationship Management Solutions, www.relationshipmsolutions.com. My business number is 470-485-4009. If you're listening and you are a business owner and you just need some help, I'm here to listen to you to see how I can help you. And if I can't help you, I'll provide resources for you.
Look, guys, I mean, we're talking about someone who's had umpteen years in the corporate banking world. To have somebody like that on your side when you're applying for loans or trying to establish lines of credit or, you know, anything involving finances, it's insane. If you're not 100% sure of it, not to have somebody like Glenda consulting with you. I mean, it's just absolutely
amazing. And I provide good service.
And she does. And she's nice. And she might have you on the podcast, and then you get to sit with me.
Exactly, exactly. So, you guys, this concludes our discussion. We're going to put a poll up. Is the customer always right?
Yes.
But, Daniel, one more thing before I let you kind of close us out. Everybody stay tuned for our next 4 episodes. We're going to start from the nitty to the gritty, okay?
Yes.
We're starting a business series starting from the business plan to financials and on. So we are going to be happy to provide you, you know, pretty much step by step, you know, some great steps in completing these things and starting your business on to running it.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's going to be a series that is really designed for the person who's thinking about starting a business and it's just kind of been sitting on the fence about it. We're going to walk you through the steps. We're going to take you through the journey of starting a business from beginning to end. And hopefully, you know, it empowers you or gives you the resources to do that.
All right.
Yeah, absolutely. So I'll go ahead and end this with, please do not forget to like and subscribe on Facebook and Twitter. It's at Daniel and Glenda. And our web address is www.danielandglenda.com. You can listen to our podcast there or on Facebook. We are on all of the podcast platforms, Apple, Google, Spotify, Audio Boom. I mean, wherever there's podcasts, we're there. So we always thank you, as always, to listening or just for listening and liking and subscribing and just don't forget to tune in because
and share. Tell your family and yeah. friends. If you're entertained, I'm sure they're going to be entertained. If this is informative to you, I'm sure it's going to be informative to them.
Yeah, absolutely. Because, you know, we like to make it fun. We know we share a lot of funny things and anecdotes and stuff because we want to make sure business is not really just boring. But we try to give you some resources and we try to give you a little humor in between.
All righty. Well, thank you guys for listening. And until next time,
let's talk about it.